Everybody, welcome back. You know, every time I sit down to record and I keep thinking that I have my opening beat settled and everything's good and I don't have to worry about it anymore, like some sort of little bit of doubt will creep into the back of my mind and I'll wonder like, is that really good? Is that really the beat that I want to run with? And I'll start playing around with the other music beats that are on GarageBand. That's the software that I use to record my episodes. And I'll find something kind of cool, and I'm like, okay, I'll run with this a little bit. I'll just kind of fuck around with it and play around for 5 minutes. 30 minutes later, I have a whole new beat and mix that I've set up. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll just, maybe every week will be something new or something, because I can't seem to settle on actually picking an actual beat to use. I swear to God, I've sat down and I've thrown something new in every time, and I'm just like, that's it, I got it. That's my beat. Fuck yeah, that's my beat. It's awesome. Hopefully I'll settle on this one. I kind of like this one. I actually put some extra time into making this opening beat. So, any of you music guys out there, clearly I've created 4 tracks in a month. So, you know, talent showing up. Welcome to another episode of the Semi-Pro Poker Show, where we are going through a journey of from being a semi-recreational player / poker professional, and finishing up with becoming a professional poker player at some point in the future. That is the goal. I am your host, Curtis Umstead, as always, and I have a very interesting / open book show for you today. The episode is titled A Tale of Two Games, or Tale of Two Sessions. And what I mean by that is I have played, over the last 5 days, I've played 2 games where things have gone the polar opposite of each other. And I'm not telling you about them just to tell you that one was really bad and one was really good. It was more in reference to telling you how they relate to each other, how they correlate, and how you can prevent yourself from having such bad sessions happen to you, and you can have more good, where you don't have to have both extremes. I mean, now, sometimes variance is going to happen where, no matter what, you are going to have sessions like I had last Wednesday, which was, oh boy, it was bad. It was an absolute atrocity. I don't know what came over me. I know in the last episode where I said I was a hypocrite, that I had done some really strange things and it maybe compounded losses in my previous 2 sessions. But that doesn't even put it into perspective what I did on that Wednesday. I mean, it was just an atrocity. There's no other way to put it. So, I got no script today. Again, I liked what I did last episode. It was just kind of going off the top of my head. I was able to come up with some good stuff, so I'm kind of doing that again today. So, just kind of bear with me here as I recap both these sessions. So, on Wednesday, I came in with, just kind of rewinding the clock here, I kind of remember not being in the greatest mindset. Like, usually what I like to do before I go to a game is I'll sometimes listen to a podcast, or I'll, you know, play some decent music or something. I try to do some sort of prep and get myself in the right mindset. And on my way to the game on Wednesday, I'd gotten straight off of work and headed straight to the game. And I just, like, there was some, like, I had just recorded, you know, a few days prior, and I was just trying to, like, play better, but I wasn't really in my normal mindset. Like, those 2 losses were still in my mind, and you know, you want to be able to motivate yourself to where, like, you don't want to make those same mistakes again. But all I was really thinking about was I gotta try better. I gotta try more. I gotta try and, you know, make up for what I did. And I just told you in the last episode that you cannot force these issues. You're going to get just dealt hands over the course of however many hours that you play. And you just have to really roll with it. And, you know, whatever good situations come up in terms of, like, making moves, you absolutely should be looking for those. But other than that, you better damn well make sure that those are good actual spots that you're doing, as opposed to just trying to make things happen out of air. And the first hand I'm going to go over is actually the last hand I played on Wednesday. This was my last hand where it just kind of sums everything up. It sums up the whole session, really. I was stuck 500 already, and I had about four in front of me. So I was slowly creeping back to where I was. I was in for 800, by the way. I was stuck five at this point. So maybe like 350, 400, but I was in for 810. I mean, I usually have a rule where I do two full buy-ins or maybe three 100 big blind buy-ins. It just depends on, you know, the night or whatever. I kind of vary it up. And I broke that rule. I'd already done two full buy-ins, and I just added on a couple times. Sometimes I get a little skewed with when I add on, which you kind of should be doing, by the way, just to kind of tag on to that point. If you buy in for 300, right, at a 1-2 game or, you know, whatever stakes you play, if you buy in for however many big blinds, as long as it's over 100, there really isn't a reason, if you're trying to play seriously in a cash game and make as much money as you can, there's really not a reason to not add on. Like, if you get below like 50 big blinds or 60 big blinds or something like that, I'm kind of throwing an arbitrary number out, I just like to play deep, but the chances of getting your winning, like being able to get into good situations with big pots, you want to be able to have a big stack when you do that. However, I will add one caveat to this. If you tilt easily, and this is on you to be honest with yourself, if you tilt very easily, like if you're down 200 early on and you add on, you know, 200 more, something like that, and you tilt easily to the points where you have thrown your stack around kind of lightly and you're more viable to get stacked, you know, especially if your image is kind of shitty, if you have a losing image and you're forcing things that don't happen, then I actually wouldn't recommend that. I think you shouldn't add on until you have a wrangle on your emotions, on your ability to continue to play well despite a session starting out poorly. And I think that for the most part, I can do that, but I didn't do that Wednesday. And I'm being completely honest with you. I should not have added on Wednesday, not with the mindset that I had. And so just be honest with yourself. Next time it happens, if you start out a session pretty slow or just doesn't go very well, then if you think that you're tilting, right? Like if you think that you're, if you notice yourself being more loose or more aggressive, then I honestly wouldn't recommend it and you shouldn't do it either. But if you are able to control your emotions and just play the game well, don't make any extra mistakes because you are down, then it's a good idea to do that. As long as your bankroll allows it to as well, that's also important. You know, it's not a rebuy per se, but you are dipping into your bankroll for more money. So do keep that in mind. However, in all cases, I don't recommend, like, if you somehow got, let's say you bought in for $200, and next thing you know, you've lost a few big pots and you're down to like 30. Like at that point, come on, you really should add on. There's, what are you hoping for with $30 to like get all in with a good hand and double through and then do it again and then do it again? You know, it's at that point you are costing yourself actual money if you're, you know, at that point you might as well add on to at least I don't know, 100 more. I'm kind of throwing out arbitrary numbers here, but you're missing out on value when you get those good hands where you could have more money behind you and you could make more money back in a quicker time frame. The downside of that is you could obviously lose more, but again, that's dependent on you being able to play well. And of course, with poker, there's always risk of losing. We all know that. So whenever someone tells me that, well, if I add on, I could lose that too. Well, yeah, obviously, but I mean, you signed up for it. This is it's poker, you know? That's just what's going to happen from time to time. And it's happened to me even when I've been playing well. It happens. But we all know, for the 100th time in a row, if you play well in the long run, if you make less mistakes than your opponents in the long run, that you're going to win. Funny that I bring that up, because I made a lot of mistakes on Wednesday. This is a PLO hand played during the last hour of... let's see here. During the last hour of... last 30 minutes of the game, we were playing PLO for a round, Pot Limit Omaha. And for those of you who aren't familiar, I'm not going to get into too much of the PLO strategy because I'm not really that good at it, to be quite honest with you. I'm a much better No Limit Hold'em player than I am a Pot Limit Omaha player. But for the most part, people don't really know what they're doing at this game. Like, a lot of people limp. They might open like aces, but I've seen people limp, you know, like double suited aces. And I'm not saying they're bad, like, because I'm not good, but I definitely am knowledgeable enough to know that you should be opening those hands. But these pots are massively multi-way, so the variance can definitely be extra high. And I have a double suited eights and sixes. I have 8-6 of spades and, excuse me, 8-6 of clubs and 8-6 of hearts. And the pot limps around to a good player, about two seats to my left in the big blind. And he's pretty straightforward, even more so in PLO, I'd say. But he is a good, knowledgeable player. He's read a lot of pretty good strategy books. We actually have talked about it past couple sessions I've played with him. You know, he's read some similar material that I have, and he's definitely digested it. His image is really, really, you know, kind of strong. But for the most part, he plays tight and doesn't make too many moves. I've seen him get caught maybe once, and it actually worked out for him where he sucked out. But so I know he is capable, but this is a no-limit hold'em where he's capable, but he doesn't do it too often. And I think that's even less of a – there's even less of a chance of him making moves in Pot Limit Omaha. Anyway, he opens the pot up and goes about four ways to me, and I call. So we're about five ways to a flop. Comes ace 9-5. Okay, ace 9-5. One or two spades and one heart. So we flop backdoor, hearts, and we also have a gut shot. With 6-8, we can hit a 7-5-6-7-8-9 for a straight. It's pretty much all we have in terms of equity. We could, you know, turn sets too with sixes or nines. But again, this guy has opened preflop. Anyway, he leads out when it checks to him. He leads out kind of small. So I have a feeling if he had something like aces that he would be leading out a little bigger. But he doesn't pot it. And like he leads out for PLO, he leads out for 50 into about 70-ish. That may sound like big, but in terms of PLO, he's not potting it. So anything less than that, I feel like is just kind of small. There goes the dog again. Anyway, one guy calls and I'm so on tilt. I call to try hit a 7. You know, it's just bad. I thought maybe I had outs with sets too. But it was just don't even get me started on how bad it was. The turn is a 3. Okay, and the pot's around close to 200, probably like 180, 170-ish, somewhere in there, right between 150 and 200. And checks to him, and he thinks about it, and he leads for 50 again. Like, he bets kind of small again, which to me tells me that he's not quite sure what to be betting with his hands here. He's not quite entirely sure in terms of sizing. And there's a call in front of him from one of the listeners of the show. And it gets back to me. And in retrospect, I don't believe that this move I'm about to do was good. In terms of his sizing, like I just mentioned, I don't think that he knows what he's doing in terms of what he's supposed to bet. But I think, you know, the fact that you're double barreling in a PLO hand multi-way, he obviously has something here. But the fact that his opponent called him behind him, the turn brought hearts, by the way. And, you know, just nothing made sense. I made a raise to 200 because I thought that I could represent 2-4 for a wheel. You know, like 2-4, like 6-7. Like I had a double gutter on the flop or something like that. And then I turned it a straight. I just thought no one had seen a bluff in PLO, especially none of us were experienced playing it at all, and I just thought it could potentially work. If you know the theme I'm going with, obviously it doesn't end up working. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's the worst move in the world, but I don't think it's something I should be doing, because if somebody has a set in PLO, they know that, well, even if he has a straight, maybe I have 10 other outs, you know, to improve to a full house. And is true, and I probably should have taken that into account, and it ended up moving in, and the other person behind him called, and I thought I was drawing strictly to a gut shot, and that I just didn't have enough equity. I mean, the pot was over 1,000 at this point, and it was about 200 or so for me to, or 250 more, so I was getting, you know, pretty damn close, but I didn't think it was good enough. And I folded, and this good player, TC Samalov, he had 5-5-9 ace. So he flopped bottom set along with top two pair. And his opponent had he had a straight draw, and he had hearts. Nut hearts, by the way. So he, and all I had was a gut shot. But it turns out both of my sixes and eights were actually equity, and the river was a black six, so I actually would have scooped, if I had somehow made an incorrect call, I actually would have scooped a, oh man, like a $1,300-$1,400 pot, and the terrible night would have been made up. But that's besides the point. That's being results-oriented, and I don't let that bother me, because how I got involved in that hand in the first place was just a fucking disaster. I tried to make something happen, where in a game where people just probably aren't going to fold much. In terms of what the good player said, I initially thought, when he first told me that he had blockers to higher sets, and that's why he decided to go with it. But that wasn't the hand I was trying to rep, so I thought initially, well, if you have blockers to higher sets, and I'm only representing a straight, and no one's seen a bluff, then in that case, you're blocking additional outs to, if my range is entirely straights, you know, if my range is entirely made hands because no one has seen a bluff. That was the story I was trying to tell. So initially I thought his reasoning, even though he's good, I thought it was actually incorrect. But talking with him last night, he thought because he had sets blocked, he thought that I could be doing this with air, and that makes sense. In that case, that actually does make sense. To then go with it, if you think I'm bluffing there, which I definitely, you know, I obviously was. So, kudos to him. It was a correct play with that reasoning. And so even though he's inexperienced, he just has a general gist of what he should be doing. PLO, so he's definitely he's a good player. So he's not a guy that you want to really mess around with too often, but he's pretty straightforward, to be quite honest with you. A lot of the time in cash games, as you probably should be in low stakes. So, who knows, in the future, maybe we'll play more hands with them and I'll discuss it then. If I ever go over, like, playing against better players or anything like that. And, anyway, his hand held, against, the listener of the show. And, He scooped a pretty big pot. But it was just kind of dumbfounding because it was a bad night for me. And I just compounded everything wrong. I did so many things wrong. I floated. I made bluffs that were stupid. I made a hero call that was so awful. And where a guy had called with bottom pair and turn trips and just gone with his hand. And I just, it was just a bad, it was terrible. So I just made compounding mistakes, and I just wanted you to know the importance of letting go of, like, losing sessions before, like, prior to playing a new session. Like, it's just important to let those go. Don't let it bother you. Don't be thinking about, oh, well, I'm on a losing streak, or the only thing you should be thinking about is whether or not you played well during that streak. And, it's just what's important, you know, because if you let it get to you, the fact that you lost, then you're kind of in your subconscious, if you're playing a hand and all of a sudden you're getting in a big pot, you might start thinking about, oh, I was in a similar spot like this where I lost last week. And you might be trying to think of ways where you could potentially lose, where you should be thinking standard, like what is my opponent's range? What can I get value against? What's the correct move here? Don't be thinking about, oh, I've lost in this spot before. And I think that happened to me a couple times, and it caused me to make incorrect decisions, like a hero call that was atrocious with essentially ace high. And another one where I let a fold get to me in a spot where it was a call, and it was correct. So I kind of shut it down for a few days. I kind of jotted down material from that game, and I kind of let it stew. And I wanted it to motivate me to never play that way ever again. So I thought about it as a motivating factor to not make those mistakes again. Not to lose again, because that's going to happen. As I've told you all, it's going to happen. Losing it's inevitable. But more so in terms of just not letting myself play that bad again. Making those just critical mistakes that compounded a massive loss. And into what could have been much less. It could have been much, much of a lesser loss, but just doing stuff. Even midway through the session, I'd started down and I'd gotten actually back to above even. And even then, like, the tilt was still there. You know, that entitlement tilt that I talked about, the revenge tilt, the stuff along those lines. So I shut it down, and then I went to the game last night. And I prepared beforehand. I left work. And I had a chance to just kind of listen to a podcast and just kind of relax and get myself in the right mental state. And it was good. I definitely did some training over the past few days, and just a little bit. I didn't do it too much, but I definitely motivated myself to just not make those same mistakes. And sure enough, I'll go ahead and give you a disclaimer. On that Wednesday, I was down $810. Last night, I was up $810. It was a complete wash. And I definitely had the right side of variance. For example, I had one hand where I limped fours from about middle position. You know, you could argue whether or not that we should be opening those hands, but y'all know me. I feel like in terms of some of the games I play, I tend to limp some of these smaller pairs, just try and flop a set, play them pretty straightforward. I think eventually I will start trying to open them. Preflop, maybe add a little bit of depolarization to my game where I'm not just limping all small pairs. I might be raising them, make it a little tougher to read my hand when I flop sets with them when I open. So, but anyway, I limp fours, pot limps around, and we go the flop five ways. It comes 8-8-5, two diamonds, checks through. The turn is the four of diamonds. And we turn a full house. I lead for $20 after it checks a couple ways to me. one guy calls, everyone else folds. Pot's around 60-ish. The river is the king of diamonds. And I bet at 20. And this opponent I'm playing against here, he's not very strong. He gets very sticky with draws, gets sticky with pairs. He can call, he can hero call with like ace high in some spots, you know. He's just apt to do some things like that. He can be very sticky. So I actually think this river card is good if he has any sort of diamond, then he's not going anywhere. And I kind of bet it in terms of if he doesn't have a diamond, he's probably going to fold. But if he does have a diamond, I'm going to bet small here so I can get raised. It looks like a... I hate blocker bets to prevent yourself from getting bluffed. I never do those in general. And they just don't make any sense where you bet small in hopes of not getting bluffed. It's just... you need to rely on your skills to be able to deduce scenarios as opposed to just lighting a little bit of money on fire just to hopefully prevent yourself from getting bluffed. Because what if you get raised? What if someone correctly deduces, well, this is a blocking bet, I'm just going to raise it as a bluff. You might get bluffed anyway. You know, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, I'm betting to induce a bluff here. I'm betting small. Either bet small to induce a bluff or bet small and get raised by a diamond flush. That was the point of this small bet. And, you know, in a disaster scenario, he could just call with, like, the Queen of Diamonds. I think that would be a little... that would suck a little bit because I could miss a little bit of value doing that. I think it's close. Which one is better? Like, going just strictly for value, like a $40 bet against, like, the Queen, the Jack, or the Ace of Diamonds. But I know this opponent can view that to the point where he needs to raise here. So, anyway, he makes it 60 more, and he only has about 80 left, so I just decide to move in, and he calls, I turn over my fours, and I'm good, and he had the Ace of Diamonds. So in this case, you know, do I think it was for sure the correct play because he had the Ace of Diamonds? You know, I think even if I bet 60, he probably raises anyway. He probably just goes with it, you know, because he has the nut flush. But I also would, I like to think that there's a small chance that if I just bet 20, that he may make it like a min-raise or not a min-raise, maybe he'll make it 60 with the Queen of Diamonds, you know. It's really close. It's probably pretty fucking even the more and more I think about it. But just something that I like to do sometimes with opponents who are apt. And I also think the small sizing leaves the door open to get bluffed. I think if you bet 40 or 60, I think that chance is greatly reduced in terms of inducing a bluff out of somebody. So... those are my only thoughts. I think it's pretty close. But I just had hands like that. I was flopping all sorts of sets. I wasn't missing many flops. People were missing draws. All that sort of stuff was happening. But at the same time, I definitely was playing good. I made a few moves, a few spots. I also made some solid just check folds when I'd open and missed on a scary, you know, kind of a scary flop. And... where I just knew the board just hit my opponent's range and not mine. And sure enough, I'd just be check folding and they'd show top pair. It was just everything seemed to be clicking last night. And I didn't try to force anything. I did make a couple moves, but they were in good spots where it was just blatantly obvious. But the reason I'm bringing that up, and I only went over a couple hands, I know. Next episode, we're going to go over... some detailed hands, because this would be two episodes without a full hand review or a session review. And the next one, we're definitely going to go over that because I'm playing a lot of poker this week. I played last night, playing tomorrow, possibly playing on Thursday. And then there's a tournament on Saturday that both me and my fiance will be going to. And it's a pretty big field and it's locally in the area. And the structure is, you know, it's pretty good. So I'll definitely be finally reviewing a tournament hand for you guys. So that'll be fun. Hopefully I win. Hopefully I cash or anything like that. But the main thing that I want to do moving forward is fuck whether or not I win or lose. I just want to play good. That's what this last Wednesday session really taught me. Is trying to play your best no matter what the results are. Getting rid of that results-oriented mindset. I went into Wednesday with the idea of, holy shit, I've lost two sessions and I've played shitty. You know, can it really keep going? I gotta cut this losing streak. And that is true. I would really like to try and end the losing streak. But you do that by playing good. And I briefly forgot that very same lesson that I had just talked about a couple weeks prior. So I think it's just so ironic that I had just recorded an episode telling you that you can't force these things. And sure enough, I then tried to force these things. So my question or my assignment to you, the listener, is to hold me accountable, you know, on the wall below episodes or on the comment section below the Blog Talk Radio section, is to hold me accountable. Make sure that I am doing the things that I am preaching. And if you think that I'm not, I want to hear that, because this is going to help me on my journey to becoming a professional. Because when I become a pro, I can't make these mistakes. And it happens to everybody, to the top level pros. Everyone tilts every once in a while. So I know that I will not be perfect. But I want to be as close to perfect as possible. I want to be able to successfully say that I tilted way less than the average person, that I played much better than the average person in the long run, and I was a success. So I definitely wanted to keep that in mind. But definitely next week we're going to focus on lots of hand reviews. We'll dip into a little bit more of my thought process, kind of what I think about in terms of tournaments as opposed to cash games. I honestly don't think I'm the strongest tournament player, but I think that some cash game skills can be applied to tournament strategies that I think that tournament players don't do when they apply to cash games. I think they are just worse when they go into cash games with some of their strategy, where I think cash game strategy can be more applicable to tournaments. You know, it's an inverse, essentially. It's not exclusive for both of them. So we'll talk about that, along with anything else that I happened to learn this week. So we're completely even for the last two sessions, and just remember, always be shooting for your goal. Always be training for, you know, shooting for that absolute A game. Don't worry about the fact that you have lost how many sessions prior. And that's what I went into last night. I was on a pretty massive downswing, over $1,000, definitely. And my win rate had been cut into significantly. And it was just, I had to sit back, had to be honest with myself and say that I was just not playing well at the time. This tilt had gone long term. It had been there over the course of three different games. I think the variance didn't help. I think it could have onset it a little bit, but variance is going to happen to me in the future many, many, many times. And I got to be prepped for it. And usually I am way better than I was. So it was just a little old mental game problem that I decided to work on. If anybody saw my Facebook post, The Mental Game of Poker is an amazing book, and I highly recommend all of you listeners, if you're looking for more reading material to purchase, absolutely buy that. I think you can get it on Amazon it's not that expensive, and I would definitely recommend reading the first one before you read the second one, but you can jump around at your own pace, and I think that's I had an old mental game weakness just pop up, and I definitely tried to correct it. And I think even if I had lost last night, I was down for a brief period of time last night, and I was playing okay still. It wasn't bothering me. And like, if I had lost again for the fourth straight session last night, I would have been okay with it because I was playing well. And just, again, be honest with yourself. Make sure that it's just the variance and it's not you compounding it. And if it is you, then do some work and fix it. It's that simple. And everyone can do it. And it's not difficult. You just have to put your mind to it. And you'll fix those leaks in no time. All right, that's going to wrap it up. I'll see you on the next episode where we get into some hands. I'll do like a shotgun hand review. where I'm talking about who knows how many hands I'll run through, four or five at least, you know, off the top of my head. But that wraps it up for us. I will see you on the next episode. We have taken one more step in becoming a professional. I'm Curtis Umstead, and I'll see you next time. Bye.